Welcome to the Sunday morning Bible class for the Atlanta Church of Christ in Gwinnett. We do this every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, and we've been studying the book of Ezekiel. We'll get into that in just a second, but before we begin, let's have a prayer. Father in heaven, thank you so much for your love. Thank you so much for your mercy, your grace. Thank you so much for the scriptures and how they help us to know you better. Father, I pray that as we look at the book of Ezekiel again today, that you will help us to understand you better, help us to understand your will for our lives, help us to put our trust in you and to obey and to learn your will for and to learn to obey your commands. We love you and we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so we've been talking about the book of Ezekiel. This is week five now. And just to give you a quick summary of the context of where we've been, we talked about, the nature of God in the first class, talking about the fact that God always does what he says he will do, and that people tend to think, oh, he's not really going to do that, but he does, whether it's good or bad, okay, God always does exactly what he said he would do. The second class, we talked about the historical background. Why did God send this message through Ezekiel? Basically, it came down to idolatry, violence, just ignoring the commands of God. That reached sort of its worst point under King Manasseh. His son Josiah had instituted some incredible reforms, but they didn't stick. Basically, Josiah had conviction about that, but apparently people around him never really got that. And so they went right back to the same things, as we're going to see further today. So that was the reason for the series of visions and prophecies from Ezekiel. But then in week three, we talked about that first vision, where you had the wheel and a wheel and the cherubim and the cherubim with the four faces and the wings and the fire and the storm and the clouds and everything. It was a frightening picture. You can kind of see it here up on the screen now. But that was the vision. And we talked about basically what God said as a result of that he was going to do. So today, we're going to talk about Ezekiel's second vision. Okay, Ezekiel's second vision will be starting in chapter 8. We'll go through chapter 11 today in the class. And so basically, let's just go to Ezekiel 8:1. In the sixth year, in the sixth month, on the fifth day, while I was sitting in my house and the elders of Judah were sitting before me, the hand of the sovereign Lord came upon me there. Okay. Now, as you recall from his first vision, he was commanded to basically act out this street mime where he was, not speaking. He was silent, but he was laying on his side, besieging Jerusalem, and then laying on his other side, besieging Jerusalem. And, that was to go on for over a year. It's a little bit ambiguous or fuzzy about exactly how that worked, but basically it went on for a little more than a year. And so what we're looking at now is about 14 months after the first vision. Okay? And that means, he's either finished or about finished his assignment from that first vision. And at this point, it says the elders are seated in front of him. So what does that mean? Basically, we're going to find out later. You may be familiar with Ezekiel 33, where he talks about, they come listen to you, but they're not going to do what you say. But they were coming to listen to him. They were curious about this strange guy that had these visions and did this strange stuff. Okay, so they came to sit before him, and the hand of the sovereign Lord came upon me there. So basically, here we have Ezekiel receiving another vision with all these elders sitting in front of him. Verse 2, I looked, and I saw a figure like that of a man. From what appeared to be his waist down, he was like fire. And from there his appearance was as bright as glowing metal. So this is the same basic description we saw in chapter 1, right? So here we have the picture of what he was seeing, the image of God, the glory of the Lord before him. Verse 3 says, he stretched out what looked like a hand and took me by the hair on my head. The Spirit lifted me up between earth and heaven, and in visions of God, he took me to Jerusalem, to the entrance of the north gate of the inner court, where the idol that provokes to jealousy stood. So, I mean, picture this. He's in front, sitting there in front of all these elders, and all of a sudden this vision comes, and God snatches him away in the vision. You know, who knows what this looked like to those elders sitting in front of him. I imagine they probably knew something's happening here, but, you know, they certainly didn't see the vision. So he was taken to the entrance of the north gate of the inner court at the temple, where the idol that provokes to jealousy stood. So let's take a look at the, we're gonna spend a little bit of time looking at the temple, because we're going to be taken on a little tour of it in Ezekiel 8. So basically what you had here, on the outside, you have what they call the outer court, sometimes called the court of the Gentiles. And that, you know, then you have on the inner court, we have what they call the court of the Israelites. And then in here, the places where only the priests could go. And in here, the most holy place where only once a year could the high priest go. Okay, so this was kind of the idea of the temple. And he was brought to the north gate of the inner court, which is right here. So that's where we begin our tour of the temple. Okay, here we have a picture. This is a model of the temple. Of course, as you know by now, the temple was destroyed, right? In fact, there's several different temples. They're not all identical. This was the Temple of Solomon. There was the second temple that was built after they returned from Babylon. And then there is a temple that was described in Ezekiel, which is neither of the two. Actually, at the end of Ezekiel, we'll get to that. But at any rate, so here you see the court of the Gentiles, the court of the Israelites, the area where only the priests could go, and then the Holy of Holies. So that was the, it's pretty a magnificent temple, okay? And, you know, that's why, you know, I'm getting well beyond this class, but when Ezra and Nehemiah, and when they come back to build the second temple, and then people, when they saw the temple, they were in tears. Some of them, it was tears of joy, because they'd never seen the first temple. Some of them was tears of mourning because it was only a shadow of what the first temple was. It never was as glorious as, you know, ornate as the first temple. So anyway, but that's just a picture of the temple. It's a model that somebody built based on what they read in scriptures. A little bit more here. You can see the holy place. You can see the court of the priests down here, court of the Israelites. And down here, notice it says the court of the women. Women were not permitted into this part. It was just the men that would go in there. They didn't have the women's lib movement at the time. So we had the priest's quarters. I mean, all these different parts. You know, Solomon's porch. You've seen some of these things mentioned in other places. The Sanhedrin had their own quarters here. Just a picture to give you an idea of Solomon's temple. All right? So, verse 4 says, "And there before me was the glory of God of Israel, as in the vision I had seen in the plain." So again, we have the same vision that he sees again, like he saw in chapter 1. We won't go into all the details of it here because we've already talked about that. But in verse 5, he goes on and says, "Then he said to me, 'Son of man, look toward the north.' So I looked, and I saw at the entrance to the north of the gate of the altar, I saw this idol of jealousy." Okay, there's an idol there in the temple, in the courtyard. And he said to him, "Son of man, do you see what they are doing? The utterly detestable things the house of Israel is doing here, things that will drive me far from my sanctuary, but you will see things that are even more detestable." So amazing stuff here. You know, and he talks about this is going to drive him far from his sanctuary. Okay, that's a premonition of what's coming. All right, but he says, the house of Israel is doing here. Okay, notice he's in Jerusalem. Israel was taken in exile by the Assyrians, 100, 150 years earlier or something, so that, the northern kingdom, but the southern kingdom is what's now in Jerusalem. But he's talking about the whole of Israel, basically the nation, the 12 tribes, okay? You'll find as you go through Ezekiel that's kind of the way this thing goes. He's really talking about the whole of Israel and how the whole thing has basically gone bad. So he's going to say, you're going to see things even more detestable. You know, provoking the jealousy of the Lord. He talks about this idol of jealousy. 1 Corinthians gives us some information about that. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 21 and 22, he says, "You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons too. You cannot have a part in both the Lord's table and the table of demons. Are we trying to arouse the Lord's jealousy? Are we stronger than he?" Now, quite obviously, they were worshiping idols in the temple. So that's, you know, that's a warning to Christians. So don't think that, oh, this doesn't apply to us anymore. Okay, this applies to Christians every bit as much as it did to them. You be careful what you worship. Be careful what you give your allegiance to. You be careful how you make your decisions. You know, you don't need to be going to horoscopes. You don't need to be going to palm readers. You don't need to be flipping a coin. You know, you don't need to be, you know, whatever the superstition you have, whether it's the rabbit's foot or the horseshoe or the, you know, we need to have nothing to do with any of that, okay? And superstitions are nothing more than idol worship. Ezekiel 8, verse 7, he says, "Then he brought me to the entrance of the court. I looked, and I saw a hole in the wall. He said to me, 'Son of man, now dig into the wall.' So I dug into the wall and saw a doorway there. He said to me, 'Go ahead, go in, and see the wicked and detestable things they are doing here.' So I went in and looked, and I saw portrayed all over the walls all kinds of crawling things and detestable animals and all the idols of the house of Israel." You know, it was a sort of, you know, kings and... Sherry and I had a chance to go to the British Museum a few years ago. And one of the things we saw there, they had murals from the halls of one of the kings, actually the king of Assyria, where they basically depicted all the things, the accomplishments of their king, and also the idols that they worshipped on the walls of the king's palace. Well, here they had done that in the temple. They had painted these idols, these, you know, basically unclean animals and things, and shown them in the middle of the temple. And as we go on to verse 11, it says, "In front of them stood 70 elders of the house of Israel, and Janaziah, son of Shaphan, was standing among them. Each had a censer in his hand, and a fragrant cloud of incense was rising." So you have 70 elders of Israel worshiping these idolatrous images in the temple of God. I mean, how bad does it get, you know, when you get to that point? You know, really interesting thing here. Remember Shaphan? You heard that name before? Shaphan, the secretary who found the book of the law and brought it to Josiah. This is his son. Okay. So remember Josiah that did all the, you know, basically all the things we're seeing here, Josiah had purged from the temple. They obviously came back, didn't they? As soon as Josiah was gone, they came back. And so, you know, basically they're the elders are, and he called out by name two guys, Jezaniah, actually in this case it's just one guy, he calls out Jezaniah, son of Shaphan, and, you know, obviously a leader of the people, a leader even among the elders, and he was worshiping idols. Verse 12, he said to me, "Son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel are doing in the darkness?" They were doing this in secret. It was behind, you had to go through that hole, and then you had to look behind that door. They were doing it in secret. "See what the elders of Israel are doing in darkness, each at the shrine of his own idol. They say, 'The Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land.' Again, he said, 'You will see them doing things that are even more detestable.'" Okay, verse 14. "Then he brought me to the entrance of the north gate of the house of the Lord, and I saw women sitting there mourning for Tammuz. He said to me, 'Do you see this, son of man? You will see things that are even more detestable than this.'" Okay, so there's an early Christian church writer, Jerome. Actually, he translated into Latin the scriptures that became sort of the standard scriptures of the Catholic Church. So he was a pretty prominent person. His interpretation of this, he believes that this was worship of the idol Adonis. Okay, and that seems to be what most of the commentators I checked out think this Tammuz represents. Adonis is called Tammuz in both Hebrew and Syriac. And Adonis worship also included an annual sort of a holiday or a period of mourning as a part of their idol worship. So they're believing they were worshiping Adonis in the temple of the Lord. Ezekiel 8:16. "He then brought me to the inner court of the house of the Lord, and there at the entrance to the temple, between the portico and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces towards the east. They were bowing down to the sun in the east. One of the commentators pointed out that when they're bowing down to the east, their hindquarters are facing the temple. They're basically disrespecting God in the most graphic way. So let's look at sort of the tour here. All right. So you see the idol of jealousy. That was the first thing he saw there at the north gate. Okay. And then you have where the detestable animals were seen. They had to dig through the wall and then look behind a door, and there they were with the 70 elders. Okay. Then we have the women mourning for Tammuz. Of course, as you recall, the court of the women was out here, but they were in here. Okay, so they were, among other things, I mean, as if the idol worship wasn't enough, they were violating the rules of the temple courts. And then finally, we have the men bowing down towards the east, which over here is the east, right? So they're bowing down to the east with the holy place right behind them. Okay, and so that's what we've just seen, what's been described to us. Verse 17, he said to me, "Have you seen this, son of man? Is it a trivial matter for the house of Judah to do the detestable things they are doing here? Must they also fill the land with violence and continually provoke me to anger? Look at them putting the branch to their nose." Okay, and most of that's pretty clear. The putting your branch to the nose, though, requires a little commentary. If you look in, if you're familiar with the Septuagint, you've heard of that before, right? Septuagint, translation into Greek of the Old Testament Hebrew. That was in use at the time of Jesus, for example. The Septuagint translates putting the branch to their nose as basically to turn up the nose, to sneer, to mock, to deride. So what he's saying here is, you know, look at them mocking me. Okay, people mocking God. I mean, you don't do that, right? So he says, he goes on in verse 18, says, Therefore, I will deal with them in anger. I will not look on them with pity or spare them. Although they shout in my ears, I will not listen to them. I mean, that's a scary thing. You never want to hear that from God. You never want him to say that about you. Okay? Because of what they had done. This is the response God has to that kind of behavior. So, we go on to chapter 9, and the executioners are sent out. Chapter 9, verse 1. Then I heard him call out in a loud voice, "Bring near those who are appointed to execute judgment on the city, each with a weapon in his hand." And I saw six men coming from the direction of the upper gate, which faces north, each with a deadly weapon in his hand. With them was a man clothed in linen who had a writing kit at his side. They came in and stood beside the bronze altar. So here come the men that God has summoned. Verse 3, now the glory of the God of Israel went up from above the cherubim where it had been and moved to the threshold of the temple. Then the Lord called to the man clothed in linen and who had the writing kit at his side, and he said to him, "Go throughout the city of Jerusalem and put a mark on the foreheads of those who grieve and lament over all the detestable things that are done in it." So God is here preparing to protect the righteous people, the people who still have a conscience about this. In Judah or Israel, okay, and so you know, notice that he goes on verse 5. He says, "As I listened, he said to others, 'Follow him through the city, kill without showing pity or compassion, slaughter old men, young men, and maidens, women and children, but do not touch anyone who has the mark. Begin at my sanctuary.' So they began with the elders who were in the front of the temple." Let that be a warning to us elders and to leaders of the church that when judgment comes, it begins with us. Okay? So, so it's an honorable thing to seek to be an elder, but it's nothing to be taken lightly. It has real responsibilities and real consequences if you don't meet those responsibilities. So, verse 5, "As I listened, he said to the others, 'Follow him through the city and kill without showing pity or compassion.'" I just read this. So this slide really just adds verse 7 at the bottom. He says, "Then he said to them, 'Defile the temple and fill the courts with the slain. Go.' So they went out and began killing throughout the city." So this is God proclaiming judgment final judgment on the city of Jerusalem. While they were killing, and I was left alone, I fell face down, crying out, "Ah, sovereign Lord, are you going to destroy the entire remnant of Israel in this outpouring of your wrath on Jerusalem?" He answered me, "The sin of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great. The land is full of bloodshed, and the city is full of injustice. They say, 'The Lord has forsaken the land. The Lord does not see.' So I will not look on them with pity or spare them, but I will bring down on their own heads what they have done." I mean, God wanted you to see, He wanted us to see, He wanted Ezekiel to see that what he was doing was just. It was right. It was deserved. And he had every right to destroy the whole nation. And he was not going to show pity. So verse 11, "Then the man in linen with the writing kit at his side brought back the word, 'I have done as you commanded.'" So the righteous have been marked. So there's going to be some people who are spared in this, right? There's not absolutely every person. It's like, no, there's nothing you can do to stop God from destroying Jerusalem. That's coming, no matter how much repentance certain people do. But individuals could repent and save themselves from destruction. Okay. So Ezekiel 10, verse 1, "I looked and I saw the likeness of a throne of sapphire at the expanse that is over the heads of the cherubim." Okay, so this is the original version, the vision that's reappearing. So, yeah, I'll let you take that in for just a second. The next slide. There you go. So remember this. You know, it's pretty scary. You know, here was Ezekiel down on the plain, bowing down, face down, before the vision of God and the cherubim and the wheels and the lightning and, you know, a very frightening thing. And it's still there. This is God in His wrath appearing to Ezekiel. Verse 2, "The Lord said to the man clothed in linen, 'Go in among the wheels beneath the cherubim. Fill your hands with burning coals from among the cherubim and scatter them over the city.' As I watched, he went in." Now, this is the guy who had gone around and marked the foreheads, right? Well, now he's done that. So now he's coming back with the burning coals and scattering them over the city, burning down the city. Verse 3, "Now the cherubim were standing on the south side of the temple where the man went in, and a cloud filled the inner court. Then the glory of the Lord rose from above the cherubim and moved to the threshold of the temple." So the glory of the Lord is getting ready to leave the temple. I mean, that's a monumental thing. That's the culmination of the whole, 350 or however many years it was, of 390 years of sin. Then So he moved to the threshold of the temple. "The cloud filled the temple, and the court was full of the radiance of the glory of the Lord. The sound of the wings of the cherubim could be heard as far away as the outer court, like the voice of the God God Almighty when He speaks." So then we have a second description of the original vision. Again, we won't go into the details of that because we've already covered that. Verse 18, "Then the glory of the Lord departed from over the threshold of the temple." I mean, this was it. He was gone. "And stopped above the cherubim. While I watched, the cherubim spread out their wings and rose from the ground, and as they went, the wheels went with them. They stopped at the entrance to the east gate of the Lord's house, and the glory of the God of Israel was above them." Okay, the glory of the Lord departing from the temple. Okay, chapter 11. Okay, "Then the Spirit of the Lord lifted me up and brought me to the gate of the house of the Lord that faces east. There at the entrance to the gate were 25 men, and I saw among them Jezaniah, son of Azur, and Pelatiah, son of Benaiah, leaders of the people." So he's calling out people again by name. "The Lord said to me, 'Son of man, these are the men who are plotting evil and giving wicked advice in this city. They say, will it not soon be time to build houses? This city is a cooking pot, and we are the meat.'" So kind of a strange sounding saying. They're kind of basically saying, nothing's going to come of this. This is almost over, and then good times are coming. Okay, but what they're doing, what they're saying, the city is a cooking pot, and we are the meat, essentially they're mocking a prophecy Jeremiah had made. They're turning it on its head. Jeremiah had made a prophecy in chapter 1, Jeremiah 1. He said, "The word of the Lord came to me again. What do you see? I see a boiling pot, tilting away from the north," I answered. "The Lord said to me, 'From the north, disaster will pour out on all who live in the land. I'm about to summon all the peoples of the northern kingdoms, declared the Lord. Their kings will come and set up their thrones in the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem. They will come against her, come against all her surrounding walls and against all the towns of Judah. So basically, he was saying the pot represented judgment coming on Jerusalem, right? Okay. They were saying, no, we're safe inside this pot, the walls of Jerusalem, and the fire is outside of Jerusalem, and it's not going to get in here and hurt us. They were saying the city walls were going to protect them from invasion. The city is a cooking pot, and we are the meat. So the meat never gets thrown into the fire. Ezekiel 11:6. This is God's take on that. He says, you have killed many people in this city and filled its streets with the dead. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. The bodies you have thrown there are the meat, and this city is the pot, but I will drive you out of it. You fear the sword, and the sword is what I will bring against you, declares the sovereign Lord. So God is not going to permit things to turn out the way they hope. Verse 11, it says, the city will not be a pot for you, nor will you be the meat in it. I will execute judgment on you at the borders of Israel. Okay, so he's basically telling them, you know, these are the prophets who are saying it's all going to turn out okay. He says, no, I'm going to drive you out. I'm going to execute my judgment on you at the borders of Israel. You will not be in the pot when that happens. Verse 13. Now, as I was prophesying, Pelatiah, son of Benaiah, died. Now, this is one of the two people he called out at the beginning. And, of course, remember the six men, they're out there executing judgment, or they're out there killing people. Okay, so here's one of them falls down dead. And some commentators think that actually, literally, at the point in time when God gave that vision, that's when he fell down. We don't know for sure. It says, then I fell face down and cried out in a loud voice, ah, sovereign Lord, will you completely destroy the remnant of Israel? Okay, you know, think back. God had promised Abraham, through your descendants, all the nations on earth will be blessed. You know, they didn't know all the rest of the story that's happened since then. All they knew was they had that promise. And that's what they hung their hat on. You know, that God had made a covenant with the people of Israel, and God lived in the temple, and they had the temple. They had, you know, God on their side. And now, Ezekiel even is hearing God's going to destroy it. So, are you going to completely destroy the people of Israel? What's going to happen to all the promises of Abraham? You know, what's going to happen to all these promises you made? But of course, God made not only promises, but he also made warnings, didn't he? We read those a couple of weeks ago, and you know, in Leviticus. So, you know, but he's saying, will you completely destroy the remnant of Israel? And notice this, verse 14, the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, Your brothers who are your blood relatives and the whole house of Israel, are those of whom the people of Jerusalem have said, they are far away from the Lord. This land was given to us as our possession. Okay, you hear what he's saying? He's saying, well, first off, the whole house of Israel, the northern kingdom, has been taken out of the land. They've been in exile. And then we have the people who, you know, Ezekiel himself is in Babylon right now, right? Along with, you know, basically when Jehoiakim was exiled, they took all of the sort of the upper crust, the leaders, the educated, the artists, they took them into exile. They're in Babylon. Now what the people in Jerusalem are saying is, okay, God's dealt with them. They're gone. They're not coming back. This is our city now. That's what they're saying. God's saying, no, I'm destroying the people that are in the city, but I've got these people out here. Okay, I've been protecting them. He says, therefore say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Although I sent them far away among the nations and scattered them among the countries, yet for a little while I have been a sanctuary for them in the countries where they have gone. Okay, a little bit of hope sounding here. Verse 17, therefore say, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will gather you from the nations and bring you back from the countries where you have been scattered. And I will give you back the land of Israel again. They will return to it and remove all its vile images and detestable idols. I will give them an undivided heart and put a new spirit in them. I will remove from them their heart of stone and give them a heart of flesh. Then they will follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. They will be my people, and I will be their God. Okay. You know, he's going to bring them back. Okay. Those people who are scattered in the nations, he's bringing them back to Jerusalem. And we'll see that. You know, Jeremiah has already prophesied that their exile is going to last 70 years. Right? So, you know, we're now, it's what, 6 years into that 70 years, right? So so there's probably not the people that are alive today, most of them, or the day of this prophecy, of course. But the people, their descendants would come back. And so, you know, and so they will follow my decrees. Okay? But verse 21 says, "But as for those whose hearts are devoted to their vile images and detestable idols, I will bring down on their own heads what they have done, declares the sovereign Lord." So even among those in exile, not everybody would be coming back. Okay, remember the you know, when Ezekiel was up here on the stage and he was chopping with the sword the ones that were scattered, and but he had a few of them he tucked in his garment, and then we pulled some out. Some of those even got thrown into the fire, but then some of the others were brought back to the city. So that's what God's going to do. Verse 24, "The Spirit lifted me up and brought me to the exiles in Babylonia in the vision given by the Spirit of God. Then the vision I had seen went up from me, and I told the exiles everything the Lord had shown me." So I guess those elders are still sitting there thinking he's, you know, he's gone into some kind of a seizure or something. You know, he's in this, you know, he's getting a vision, who knows. But then he comes back. And he's talking to these elders. Now, just think about the things that he just saw that he's telling them about. He's telling them about the elders worshiping vile images in the temple. He's talking about the elders prophesying that, you know, we're the meat in the pot. We're not going to get into the fire. And remember God saying, you're going to meet your judgment at the borders of Israel. How do you think that conversation went? Not well. So there we have Ezekiel chapters 8 through 11. Now, what we're going to do next week, of course, is that we're going to be at the park, right? So we'll not have a Bible class next week. The following week, we will get into chapters 12 through 15. There's going to be more prophecies about exile, specifically prophecies about their king being exiled. There's going to be prophecy of famine. There's going to be woes on false prophets, woes on idolatrous elders, you know, and then we will continue on. We're now this was class 5. We've got, I think, 9 weeks left to finish this, and we're on chapter, we've done 11 out of 48 chapters. So as you can see, we're going to be accelerating a little bit as we move forward. Okay, and we won't cover everything in the book of Ezekiel. You know, feel free to read it and study it on your own. But I would recommend that you do that. And some good things to read along with this are the last few chapters of 2 Kings, where some of the history that's going on behind the scenes here is talked about. And then also about the return from exile in Nehemiah and in Ezra, some good things to look at. So anyway, that was class for today. Go get your kids, and we will begin worship in a few minutes.